Hello, welcome to the game of John Kurtz, joined by Tyler Dreiling and Mitch Fortner. I've got some big news to lead off the show here for you, but first I'll give you the rundown today. Kellis Provident's going to come on at 4:25, final time during basketball season. Some end-of-the-year stuff to talk about where the program is going moving forward. At 5:10, I'm going to tell you why you, the K-State fan, you have every right to be very frustrated at this point in time. At 5:40, Kelly in Vegas on the show. Tyler had a chance to catch up with her earlier today on what she likes as far as gambling picks for the NCAA tournament. It's basically the two biggest weeks of the sportsbook year with the NCAA tournament first and second rounds, and now the second weekend, I'd imagine, is close, but probably not quite as big as the first time around. So I am very interested to see what she has to say. Will she be betting on Frank Martin? And speaking of, that is what I open the show with here today. I'm sure many of you, I know I haven't really had a chance to talk to you in this forum, this context, since the weekend. I'm sure many of you were thinking about the Cult of Frankites when Frank Martin defeated Duke to get his ticket punched to the Sweet 16. First time in South Carolina history that they have been to the Sweet 16. And that, I guess, was the nudge that I needed to follow through on what we've been kicking around here on the show for a while. I don't know if everybody believed me that I was serious, but the first shirt, hot off the press, has been created. The Cult of Frank t-shirt exists. It exists, and it is in my possession. So Bob from Manhattan, that call will live in infamy now forever, at least in my closet, because Cult of Frank t-shirt is going to be there.
It's not staying in your closet. You're going to wear that.
Well, I mean, sure, I'll wear it, but like, it will rest in my closet. I think you understand what I was doing there. It was pretty quick.
I'm just now finding it. I'm
pretty quick turnaround.
Okay. All right. That's not bad.
Yeah. Thank you. Mitch saw the picture of it. Mitch, what'd you think? Do you like the t-shirt?
It's 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. Okay. How could I get better? How could I get a little better every day with it?
That's
I'd go different color scheme, maybe.
Well, here was the problem. I was thinking purple at first, and then what I really wanted was black. But when you do the black, the design of it that was made by our friend Dan Halen at K-Rock, shout out to him, he did a great job. When you went black, it messed up how it looked. Like, his face did not look very good, so I had to go to a lighter shade to therefore allow the print to be darker. So I went gray on black. That was really the only way I could get it to work out. Without just using a white t-shirt, I am far too pale to be rocking white t-shirts on a consistent basis, so I had to go something other than white.
That font was designed to just be straight across instead of arched like you used it, but that's basically my only complaint with it.
Yeah, but I still think it looks cool.
Yeah.
The font still looks cool.
It turned out pretty nice.
That is Dan's design.
Hey, I'm...
Don't you...
I call him like I see him.
Okay.
And I've got a little bit of experience with t-shirts, believe it or not.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. We're going to talk hoops here, and it is really the, I guess you go with a post-mortem of the season here today, because we didn't have very much time on Monday. I'm Wildcat Insider, and I was trying to give Wyatt the forum for as long as possible there to go ahead and kick around his thoughts at the end of the season. I just had this overwhelming feeling of, well, this seems appropriate. This seems about what this team is, has been the entire year. I've been calling them very bubbly for like 2 months, much to the chagrin of any kind of opposition I was getting there from across the table early on, but this team was a bubble team, and they wound up rallying to make the first four, winning a game in the first four, and then losing handily in the round of 64. Doesn't that seem like about where this thing was? About where this team was?
More or less, if you took, if you take the sum of everything into the equation, because we clearly saw that K-State was capable of playing like a Sweet 16 teams at times this year. They were also capable. I mean, you scoff at that, but again, they could have beat Kansas at Allen Fieldhouse. They had 6 wins over really solid teams this year. They beat Baylor 2 out of 3, a Baylor
TCU
team.
TCU did beat Kansas in Sprint Center.
Different. That's different. Beating him in Sprint Center and playing him within 2 in Allen Fieldhouse. That,
oh.
Honestly, that's a win for Allen Fieldhouse.
Sprint Center's pretty loud and full of Jayhawks fans.
Splitting hairs. But,
more than fit.
But, I mean, come on, man. You admitted to that over the season. When K-State was playing at its best, it looked like a Sweet 16 team. It was a team that could have beat Cincinnati, and we I mean, we went into that game thinking the K-State had a chance to beat Cincinnati. I was really impressed by how good the Bearcats were.
Okay, well, but, I don't want to derail the conference. This is getting – that's my fault. We're getting
but
away
I'm,
from
what
the
I'm saying is that at the top end, K-State looks like that, and at the bottom end, they lost to Oklahoma by 30 and lost to TCU at home and lost to – or lost four straight Big 12 home games and had some other issues. So I think that if you take all of that – into the equation, making it to the round of 64 is pretty much what you're left with.
And the thing that stuck with me from our conversation on Monday with Wyatt Thompson actually was when we were talking, I believe it was first off air, and then this transition happened on air, and we did discuss it a little bit, but you watch how soundly K-State got beat by Cincinnati and how it really did look like, I mean, Cincinnati is a level or two above K-State. They looked like a much better team. Then you turn around and watch Cincinnati just get handled by UCLA. And I realize UCLA is a very good team, but it was fairly sobering in respect to trying to figure out how far K-State is from being a team that will have that kind of potential. And I know you just said at times they were playing their best, they look like they could be a Sweet 16 team. But for the majority of the season, we knew that they weren't. We knew that this was not a second weekend type of team. And I think what you have to ask yourself is, can you get to the point under this coaching staff where you're going to, at some point, have the culmination of a 2-3 year run, a class that comes in, develops for a couple years? Do they have the potential to be a second weekend type of team? Because, like it or not, and I know a lot of people don't, hashtag cult to Frank, but the bar has been set as to what this program can be here in the modern era, and that is going to the tournament 4 or 5 times, getting to the round of 32 4 times, and in 2009, 2010, Frank Martin's 07, 08, 08, 09, 09, 10, third year, a 3-year culmination of working guys in through the program. They were Final Four good, basically, because they were, you know, they were leading an Elite Eight game at the under 4 timeout in the second half with a trip to the Final Four on the line. And I'm not saying that's where you necessarily have to be. But how about, let's say, Cincinnati, UCLA, like team capable of getting to the second weekend? I found it very sobering to watch the UCLA-Cincinnati game and realize, man, Cincinnati was that much above where you are at right now. Take that up another notch, and that is getting to the Sweet 16. And I think these are the questions that need to be asked.
Okay. I think that there is a clear gap between where K-State is at and getting to the second weekend. I think that's totally fair, and you can use the K-State-Cincinnati game to make that point. I don't look at the Cincinnati-UCLA game nearly the same way because Cincinnati led that game with 17 minutes left. I mean, they were the better team in the first half. UCLA was really good in the second half, and I look at UCLA as a legitimate Final Four contender, legitimate national championship contender, not just the bare minimum of what you have to be to get to the second weekend. So I don't think there's any shame in Cincinnati getting outplayed in the second half against UCLA, but the first point is very valid. I think that K-State, I mean, if you had K-State play UCLA, for example, I would be surprised if that was within 20 points. And that maybe is a better way to describe what we're talking about here. K-State is a team that that is capable of beating most teams in the country, but if you just look at their average and what they are on a most consistent basis, they aren't a team that you can bank on them, you know, winning more than one game in a row or two games in a row against teams that are actually legitimate second weekend teams, and that's the problem.
Well, let's take it from here. So you have this core group of Barry Brown, Kamau Stokes, Dean Wade, and I suppose if you want to throw Xavier Sneed in there as well, I mean, that's the core that you're essentially working with right now. If you're going to talk about can this group in 2 years before those guys are all seniors and done be a second weekend type of team, I think first you got to start by just looking at next year and saying, well, are they going to progress or regress next season? Because to even get to the level of trying to build upon where you were this year, getting to the round of 64, you got to see if next year is going to be a stepping stone there or if it's going to be a lateral move or if it's going to be a step down. And I think that is totally in play to debate here, and that there's a lot of factors. I mean, first, let's start with what you lose. Wesley Iwundu, the last 3 weeks of the season, played like a guy who's going to be in mock drafts, and we've seen it. Bleacher Report, now, you know, I don't know how much to actually trust that. I don't know the NBA draft well enough. They had him going in the first round of the Thunder. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, but I've seen three other mock drafts that have him as a second-round draft pick. Like, Wesley Iwundu raised his level of play to a level that, frankly, I didn't think he could get to the last 3 weeks of the season. And it's now, I suppose, as you and Cole were debating yesterday, a debate as to whether he's a bigger loss than DJ Johnson, who, by the way, was your only reliable big guy inside this year. I think there's a huge deficiency at point guard. Kamau Stokes is a capable shooting guard. At point guard, I mean, the guy averaged 4 assists, 3 turnovers a game and shot 36% from the floor. Not great numbers, and I think it's partially because he's being asked to do something that is not necessarily what his skill set fits. So can you bring in a point guard? Well, the recruiting at point guard under Bruce Weber has been Javon Thomas, Michael Loris, Nigel Johnson, and then, you know, I suppose Kamau Stokes. I mean, it's not a great track record, I suppose, is what I'm saying. And then you're going to have to go find a JUCO or a fifth-year transfer big. I mean, my point is there are a lot of moving parts here that would have to fit together for this team to be better next season.
I agree, and I would add to that with this. We know that K-State is going to have to find a solution at point guard, whether that's Cartier Jara stepping in or going out and finding a transfer or what have you. We know they're going to have to find a body with some girth to replace DJ inside. That's what we know, but I think that you could add on to it with this. This year's team was a team that you had, you know, 5 or 6 guys that on any given night could score 10 or 12 points for you. You could have 5 guys in double figures. Next year, I think the team takes on a different dynamic because I think you are going to need Barry Brown to score 14 or 15 a game. I think you're going to need Dean Wade to score 14 or 15 a game, and I think you can say that about Xavier Sneed as well, probably 12 or 13 a game from him, and you're going to get a lot less from your 1 and your 5. And the question to me is, can Barry Brown go to that point where he's scoring 15 a night? Can Dean Wade go to that point where he's scoring 15 a night? Xavier Sneed, can he take that step up? That player development question is just as worthy of a question as if K-State can actually go out and find a point guard and a center to replace those two guys.
Yeah, agreed. Totally agreed. And I think you just don't have a lot of reason to be confident that it's going to be anything that is above average. Player development, the recruiting. I mean, I think we have a long track record here of – and let me – you know, I feel like I'm maybe coming down too hard. I don't mean to come down too hard. I think there's a perception out there by some that have been against this regime for a long time that think that Bruce Weber is some kind of dummy. And he is far from that. I mean, the guy knows basketball, and I think he is what he has shown to this point in his career. We got 14 years worth of data of him at a Power 5 level. I think he's an average Power 5 coach. But the problem that you're facing right now is, look, last 12 years, he's 106 and 106 in conference play. 500. You're stuck in a weird area where you've seen that you can do better. You've seen that the program can be consistently better like it was before. You know that you could do much worse if you went out to try and take the risk to get a new coach. And by the way, you don't have an athletics director anyway right now to be making any kind of hire. So you're just stuck in a weird spot here. I think the evidence would tell you on paper right now it's big time up in the air whether or not this team progresses much next season at all or if they're in basically the same spot. And there's not a whole lot in the past that would give you a ton of faith that it's going to really push high enough forward to satisfy a lot of people.
I'm with you.
That's really where I feel like it's at right now. And we're going to address some of that as well at 5:10 because I think you can kind of get where I'm going with all this, but there is some extra stuff that we haven't hit on yet that I think makes it totally inbounds for you as a K-State fan to be extremely frustrated with the state of affairs right now. But real quick, before we take a break and get to Kellis, let's talk with Larry in Manhattan who wants to chime in on the future of K-State hoops. What's up, Larry?
Yeah, my benchmark is always, and it should be for every team in the Big 12, can you win a Big 12 championship with the coach that you have? And you have to answer that, yes or no, and make your decisions based on that. Really, it's the Big 12 championship, more so to me than even going to a Sweet 16. But because I know you're going to get into the tournament if you win the Big 12 championship. But I think that's a more realistic goal, an easier goal to achieve, I just think that that's the answer every team has to ask.
Well, I understand what you're saying, Larry. I'm going to make my counterpoint to you here by asking you this. What was more fun, watching K-State get to the second weekend in 2010 or tying Kansas for a Big 12 title in 2013?
For me, tying Kansas for 2013.
Okay, well, we're gonna be completely. We could not be further from the same spot.
I could see that coming from a mile away.
We could not be further from the same spot on that. I think, and I appreciate the phone call, Larry. It's good to get, you know, people on the other side here. I'm totally welcome to that. But I think in today's day and age, most people are more drawn to tournament success, and that makes, by the way, life really hard on coaches. But that's the state of affairs here. How fun was winning that first four game? People got really into winning that first four game. It's a game in March. It's a game in the tournament, even though it was just a playing game to get into the tournament. That's how coaches are measured, by March success in college basketball in today's day and age. And, I mean, the other problem I would have with using the measuring stick in the Big 12 for a coach, a Big 12 title, Kansas has won. I always forget. How many have they won straight? Is it 13?
13.
They've won 13 in a row. Like, nobody else is winning conference titles. So you can't really hold that as a measuring stick to any coach in the Big 12 right now, because everybody's going to fall short. You know, if that's your measuring stick, who is meeting that? So, look, tournament success is how it goes. If you're a small coach, like a mid-major coach, how do you get to the next level? You get to the next level by making noise in the tournament. You don't get there by winning your conference every single year, because you got to go win the conference tournament, get to the NCAA tournament, and have success there. That's really how guys, stars become bright and move on. Like it or not, that is what the measuring stick is, and that's another thing. Bruce Weber has not been beyond the round of 64 more than once since 2007. Since Bob Huggins came here in Manhattan, he's been to the round of 32 once. It's a problem. It's a problem. At 5:10, I'll tell you why you definitely have every right to be frustrated. Next up, though, is this a tournament team next season? Let's ask Kellis as he stops by to do really, I guess, his own post-mortem on the basketball season here on the game.